You remember how at the end of the first movie, they finally make it to the theme park, but it's closed, and so they have to force the security guard to let him in and do a whole thing? You really question how they're going to top it in the second one. I guess they're going to Europe. We're talking about John Wick Chapter 2. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where it is June, and that means it's time to talk about John Wick as we cover the four main John Wick movie properties. My name is Drew, and I am excited to talk about a man who kills quite a number of people, but I can't do it without, hey, wasn't that guy in the first movie and also killed in the first movie? And there he is again. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Also, kudos on the vacation parallel. That was pretty funny.
Thank you. Thank
you. At first, I was like, where is he going with this? And then I was like, ah, well played. We are talking about John Wick Chapter 2 after the first one more than doubled its budget. It did get greenlit for a sequel. John Wick cost twice as much. John Wick 2 cost twice as much, $40 million, but it made much, much more than the first movie, $174.3 million globally, a number that will continue to grow. I think what I said last week was my current listing, and I had this movie at the bottom with the asterisk that I love all of these movies. And I'm really curious to see how I feel, how it fits into this quartet. But I kind of think that it's going to kind of keep its place. And I'm really interested to talk about why. But let's start off. So how did you find John Wick Chapter 2?
Yeah, so let's talk. So John Wick Chapter 2, a couple of years later, much bigger budget, a lot of the same creators coming back, at least Chad Stahelski, and I think Derek Kolstad write the first one? I think he did.
Yes.
And of course, your boy Keanu Reeves coming back to play the man himself. This movie was, and again, this is almost 10 years old now that I say this. I had a really good time with this movie, and I want to say that before I immediately dunk on it, because I don't want to. This movie, especially at the very beginning, is guilty of every big budget action movie sequel of all, everything that the big budget action movie sequels do, this movie also did it. And therefore it makes it seem a little sillier as a result.
So I fully agree with you, but I also think this movie is, I don't think they ever expected to make a sequel. And I think we have a movie that is kind of at war with itself. And as I was watching this movie for the second time, because I hadn't watched this in quite some time. I've rewatched every other one, but I hadn't rewatched the second one for whatever reason. And I found myself really interested because, yes, the first 15 minutes, which, like, especially the first 45 minutes of Chapter 2 kind of feels like DLC or an expansion of the first.
Yes, like, we have the same story being told by a different Russian guy.
Well, it's the brother of the mob boss from the first movie.
Yes, I mean, because he even says, my nephew stole his car, killed his dog, da-da-da.
And they have the car, which is why he's going after them.
He also tells the same with a pencil.
Well, they do this thing where they do all these callbacks, like, oh, it's John Wick's car. And his second lieutenant goes, oh. So we have some of these same jokes.
Oh, and this Russian mob boss is played by Peter Stormare, by the way, who I just like watching Peter Stormare work.
I do too. He's great. And I think what's so interesting about this, so we have this sequence where he goes to this warehouse, beats all these guys up. Well, beats them up, kills them. to get his car back. But because he knows, what I thought was interesting is like when he gets to the boss, you know, he offers peace. Because this guy wasn't going after him specifically. They were just guarding the car. So he gets to the boss and is like, hey, I just need my car. I will not kill you. Let's drink to that. And, you know, basically, Peter Stormare. Is that it? Or is that just how you pronounce it?
I mean, I think I'm right. I don't know.
I don't, that's why I'm asking.
Hang on. Let me listen to Wikipedia's pronunciation.
Okay.
No.
So that might have been Stormare.
Pieter Stormare is what it said, if you could remember.
Okay, cool. Thank you. He says, you know, can a man like you know peace? Which is, you know, obviously a question that's continually raised in the first movie as well. And
which I have some takes about some of the line readings as a result of that, but
yes. But as this movie continues, I seem to feel like the directors, you know, they were writing a sequel because, hey, we want a sequel to this movie. It did pretty well. We want another one. And I feel like as they're writing this movie, they are kind of like, at first, okay, we're writing this bit, which kind of feels like, all right, full on typical sequel. And then once the movie properly starts, it almost seems to be commenting on the kind of sequel that they were writing before. And there are some specific choices that make me think that, where it almost feels like the filmmakers are not angry that they have to make a sequel, but make a sequel that they, in a way that they may not have wanted to make. And, but it also, by the end of the movie, they have kind of found that even ground of the kind of movie they want to make, and 3 and 4 fully like embrace that.
Well, this movie also felt like, yeah, we're getting to make a sequel, but we're going to plan for a couple of more this time.
Oh, I mean, the ending of this movie sets up everything
that happens next. So to log line this movie, because I think it's kind of weird in that it is both wholly John Wick, but also a very standard plot line in a way that the first movie wasn't in a weird way. John goes to get his car back. His car is completely destroyed. He gives it to Aurelio. Yes, John Leguizamo back for a scene. Good to see him. Who says he can have it
by Christmas.
Christmas 2030 is what he says, which is a great line.
I mean, I love John Leguizamo, so that's great.
Yeah, I do too. But then he is visited in his home. And he's kept the dog from the end of the first movie. I don't even know if we talked about the dog at the end of the first movie, but
we did.
The dog from the end of the first movie, and now he is visited in his home by a crime boss named Santino D'Antonio,
or as I like to say, Italian. Sorry. I just kind of blanked about exactly who he reminded me of. The guy just passed away. Oh my gosh.
Wow. This is great audio.
I know. Italian Udo Kier.
Oh, okay. Udo Kier is who I was getting Peter Stormare confused with. That is who I was getting Peter Stormare confused
really?
With. We talked about it because they're weird European dudes. No offense to either of you guys. You guys are both great. I like watching you and stuff. But anyway.
I mean, Udo Kier is no longer with us.
Yes, Udo Kier passed away. And he is not in this movie. So, but anyway.
No, but his younger Italian self is.
So.
Who, like, Riccardo Scamarchio, This man plays smarmy to perfection. I really loved his performance in this movie.
It was good. I mean, I got something to say about the end of this movie, but let's just say, boy, I'm glad that John did what he did, even though it
1,000%
gonna cost him everything. Santino wants John to do something, and John is like, no, I'm out. But he presents him with this thing called a marker that has John's blood in it. And yes, we are now a step deeper into the mysterious world of this underground group of assassins and all of that. And apparently it's a blood oath that when invoked has to be fulfilled or else it's bad or something. And it has its own specific.
So basically, if you do this blood oath, if you do not fulfill it, essentially war is declared. And until you agree to do it, which is John refuses. And as a result, homie just destroys his house. To which Winston is even like, you're kind of lucky he only did that.
Yeah, which I do love that we get Jimmy the cop back for a scene in this.
You working again, John?
And he just looks at the wreckage. Is like, oh man, it's just funny. John agrees to do this thing, which is kill Santino's older sister Gianna, who is technically the head of their crime family.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we also have the first reference of the high table, which I assume will come into play later on in these movies.
Oh yes.
Effectively John is supposed to go and kill this lady, and you think that's going to be the whole movie, and then he's out. But of course, that is not how things go. And this is where I find this opening part of the movie, it's almost cartoonish how easily John gets in to where Gianna is.
They do kind of give you this preface of, you know, John was called the Ghost. And so
in addition to being called Baba Yaga.
Yes, but
anybody hears clinking, I decided to drink a little bourbon in John Wick's honor tonight. Because that's his drink of choice.
That's his drink of choice, which I have bourbon behind me. I should pour myself some. What are you drinking, by the way?
Not anything as fancy as what he was drinking.
They were drinking probably the highest of the
I'm pretty sure he was drinking Blanton's, which is known for the horse on the stopper.
Yes, the horse figurines that are collectible.
And because each letter has a different position that the horse is in and all of
right.
that.
Which is hilarious. The bottle of bourbon I have is the Kentucky Derby edition of Woodford Reserve.
I am also drinking some Woodford. I'm drinking a Prohibition era Woodford.
Woodford's actually kind of my favorite bourbon.
I don't love this one, but it's okay.
Is it the regular one or is it the rye or the...
It was a special pour that was like the Prohibition.
Yeah, some of their special ones I can't get into either. But one of the things that I love about this movie is it does continue to build the world up, but it also doesn't sit to like, hey, we're going to explain everything that happened to lead us here. Like, we still don't get like John Wick's story. We get hints of it, but we don't get like the origin of John Wick, which I'm very thankful for.
What we do get, though, is a bunch of fun cameos from people in Rome. You've got the guy that he like, not even, even before he gets to Rome, he goes to this like a bank that's run by a bunch of Hasidic guys, and they let him into this safe deposit box where he gets a suit out and a bunch of stuff. He then goes, and when he gets to Rome, He is greeted
by hunting Mr. Wick.
Yes. He's greeted by Julius, who is the guy that runs the Continental in Rome. Because, yes, the Continental is not just in one location. It's in a bunch of different locations. You have the guy that does his maps, which was cool. You have his tailor that's making a bunch of suits where, yes, it will completely...
Those suits are so sick.
It will completely stop bullets, but it will be very painful.
Which, I mean, again, I love that because even though we are entering the realm of the ridiculousness, and we're going to stay in that realm, but like once they get to where they want to be, it's ridiculous in the right way.
I mean,
like
it's the same thing that we said about the first movie. Like, yes, John Wick sometimes has magic bullets or magic bullet counts, but he reloads just enough, and they make just enough of the point of him reloading the gun that you think, okay, yeah, he's definitely doesn't have magic bullets. He is definitely reloading his gun in a super accurate amount of times.
Well, and remember, at one point he only gets 7 bullets.
Yeah, yeah. which is another great spin they do with that end fight. But we'll get to that in a minute.
I agree. But I also love the fact that like they still stick with the idea of that kind of Jackie Chan idea of like John gets his ass kicked a lot. Yeah. Like he will win and he's a great fighter and killer, but he takes his licks.
Well, and this is like where I have some small issue with the character. But before I get to that character, I do want to throw a shout out to Peter Serafinowicz as the sommelier. So good. Like I'm looking for appetizer, main course, dessert. and that all coincides with a different style of gun. It's just very good. I like it a lot.
Or knives. Yeah, I love that bit. It's the chosen language and coded language in these films is so fun and just so, I don't know, I just eat it up, you know. It's no pun intended. I think it's so much fun. And one of the things that like once we get to kind of the mission is where we get this bit where I feel like the filmmakers are kind of maybe pushing back against the studio or a little irritated because I can tell they're being pressured to go bigger. And, you know, when you make this grounded but ridiculous movie, like this very John Woo influenced movie, you don't want to go too big. You know, I don't think they were ever wanting to be a Fast franchise, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously they're being pushed to like do these crazy things. And there's one specific scene where I feel that they are making 100% a commentary on that moment. And it's after he kills Gianna.
Which I want to talk about. I want to talk about that moment too, because it's
wonderful, very cool moment. Also, despite the fact that she's only got maybe 15 minutes in this movie, Claudia Gerini was phenomenal. Like, and this also speaks to the writing is they write the character still in such a way that like they are lived in, there is context, they just don't tell you the whole story. And like the entire time she and John are talking, I'm like, I want to know their story, because they clearly had not a romantic relationship, although maybe at some point, but there was definitely some sort of kinship between them. But and I love what this does, because what we said last week is despite the fact that he is the protagonist and he is in the right in terms of action movie storytelling, we also know that John Wick wasn't always a good guy, and now that he has kind of done what he needs to do to kind of get his revenge and has kind of fallen back into being back, we see like, yeah, he's, even though he's like, I've got no choice but to do this thing, he is still going to kill his friend. And I found that interesting, because the movie is forcing you to look at John Wick and be like, hey, you might be rooting for him. Doesn't mean he's a good guy.
Right.
We just happen to cast a great guy to play him.
Yeah. But I loved that when he's with Gianna, she takes matters into her own hands. And you really think for a second that, oh, so this is how they're going to make John Wick the good guy here, and that he goes in there, but he doesn't actually kill her. Except he then still, when she's bleeding out in the bathtub, puts a bullet in her head just to make sure the job is done.
I wonder if it's to make sure the job is done or that he fulfills the contract. Because if she kills herself, well, John didn't do anything.
Maybe.
Therefore,
I don't know.
Maybe he still owes a marker. So I assume that that's why he put the bullet in her head. Because she was already dying or almost dead. And then there's this great scene because her close bodyguard, or I mean, he claims that he's her ward, played by Common, played very well by Common, by the way.
So
I don't care what you say. I thought Common was great in this movie.
I don't have any problem with Common's performance at all. What I have a small issue with, but I also find very funny, is that Common is on John's level. Seemingly completely on John's level, at least at first. Now, John has killed a bunch of dudes and gotten hurt a lot before he fights Common. They do seem to know each other well. They keep dropping hints about professional courtesy and things like that, which is just a fun little thing. I don't know.
It is a very fun little thing that comes back in this movie.
they can't have one of them win the fight. Because you certainly can't have John beaten by this guy. But John can't win the fight yet. So they have this whole long, drawn-out fight until they both break through the window at the Continental, and then, oh, it's neutral ground. We can't do anything.
So let me back up just a smidge. Because, one, there's a great exchange where he sees John for the first time, and he goes, "You working, John?" And John just goes, "Afraid so, Cassian." and Cassian knows exactly what that means because he knows where John came out of. But there is this phenomenal sequence of John killing guys throughout this gigantic club and then ends up on stage, shoots a guy in the face. The entire crowd who's dancing erupts and Woo! Puts their hands up in the air and cheers because they think it's part of the show. And to me, that is the director and the writer giving the finger to the studio of like, oh, you want bigger and better? This is what you want. This is what you're gonna cheer for. This over the top stuff right here. Fine, we'll give it to you. Like, it just seems like such an angry choice, and I really like that because it still works for the movie too.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, honestly.
And I think this movie's so fascinating, despite the fact that I think it's probably the most flawed from my memory, because they're trying to find their voice. Like, who were we after the first film? And after this sequence, I feel like the movie starts to find what it is. And I think the second half of this movie ends up being a really solid John Wick sequel.
Because the twist that we should have all seen coming happens in that, oh, this guy who ordered John to kill his sister, now, what kind of a brother would I be if I didn't avenge my sister's death? Which is just, right. I hate that I like that so much. It's such a funny bit. I think it's great. I think it's great.
And not Udo Kier just plays it to perfection. Like, this dude just is so good at just being this smarmy boss. But to fast forward to what you were talking about, when they crash into the Continental, the I can't remember his name, but the Italian Winston, basically.
Julius. His name is Julius.
Julius.
Played by Franco Nero.
Yes. Who has... in so many things.
He was the title character in the original Django, which is what the Tarantino movie
yes
borrows the title of.
Is he I don't know if he's the bad guy. He's in Die Hard 2, isn't he?
I don't know, because I've never seen Die Hard 2.
Hey, we'll fix that one day.
We're gonna. I'm looking now. He was in Die Hard 2 as General Ramon Esperanza.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. So the crash through the because we didn't, you mentioned it, but they crashed through the windows of the Roman Continental, because yes, there is a Continental on every continent. And possibly in various countries, as far as we know. But we know there's one in Rome. And I love the fact that Julius just kind of looks like a disapproving father at both of them. Like, these guys are like the top, the creme de la creme of hired killers, bodyguards, whatever. And this guy looks at them like they are two drunk frat boys who got caught drinking at the Row, you know, and which is a stupid reference to a college that Drew and I went to.
Well, there are fraternity rows on a lot of college campuses.
There are. And may I suggest taking this to the bar? And then you get the still gin, still bourbon.
Yeah. This is where, and again, I don't think this is Common's fault. John says one of those things, you know, like, can a man like me ever find peace? And you could just leave that line and we think about it. But then Common's character, Cassian, says, no, John, I don't think you can, because you've done too much bad stuff and too much stuff's following you around. And let me over-explain this entire bit right here.
Yeah, that's a writing issue. I agree. Yeah. It's not Common's fault. And because I really like Common in this movie, I do think the movie does fail him, because I feel like Cassian is supposed to be super cool. I still don't think he's supposed to be quite at John's level, but he's supposed to be, you know, he can hold his own. And I like that. And yes, this whole professional courtesy, because as they finish their drinks, he says, you know, I am going to find you. But when I do, as a professional courtesy, I'll make it quick. And of course, John goes, I'll try to do the same. which is a good line.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about Ruby Rose.
No, we haven't.
Who I feel like I'm the only person in the world that really likes Ruby Rose.
I don't know, something about her.
I love her in this movie.
It's fine.
Like she plays this mute assassin who is basically the number one, like the right hand person of Italian Udo Kier. Which I need to stop calling him that.
Santino.
Santino. His character name, Santino. And I think she's, they make every effort to make her look cool, and I think they succeed. Because Ruby Rose already looks cool, and they just make her a cool mute assassin who does speak in sign language. And you do have this little bit where, like, they try to repeat the same gag from the first movie where, like, she signs something to John and then John signs something back. I also love when she says, BC and you, and instead of being like, he says anything, she just says, sure.
And just walks off.
Which is such a Keanu thing. And I just love it so much.
Yeah. Well, so this, honestly, this is the next arc of the movie is one that I absolutely love. I think is completely ridiculous in all of the both good and the best and worst ways.
Yes.
And really, again, I think maybe pokes some holes in the, or leads to the giving the middle finger to the, to the production company. Santino puts out a hit on John Wick where, again, and now we are seeing a whole, like, 60s themed receptionist telephone operator thing that operates the hit list
all these, like,
somehow
crazy like almost like Rosie the Riveter looking people but with tattoos and stuff are like typing at these
they're doing like old telephone switchboards plugging stuff back and forth and they're speaking in code. It's all very fun. It's all very good. But what that means is when John Wick lands back in New York City, because we're back in New York now, seemingly everyone on the street is out to get him. And this is...
Well, it's an open hit.
It's an open hit, and we see that it goes out to basically every Nokia phone in the tri-state area. It's all old cell phones, and I kind of like that.
I do too. I also like that this idea that, like, the reason they specify open contract is typically it's a single contract. It's usually I'm hiring one person to do this hit. No, this is open. And whoever gets there, gets there.
Yeah. So, but what this means is we have a number of crazy assassins attacking John Wick on the streets of New York or in the subway system, or sometimes in front of the same multicolored background area, which I thought was a little funny.
Well, and they do this weird thing where they it's visually confusing to the audience, because especially once they bring up the pencil again, you're left wondering, is some of this like a flashback? And because of the way it's shot, and it's not, it's just a really hectically put together.
We see the beginnings of three different fights, the middles of three different fights, and the end of three different fights kind of mixed up together.
But because they bring up the pencil at a bar, which is something that has been brought up several times in these two movies, you're left to wonder, wait, are they also showing the parallel of him getting out of the impossible task? And no, they're not.
No. And this is where we have some funny things, like the violin busker on the street who pulls a gun out of her electric violin to attack John with, which was fun. The couple of guys that seem to know each other and work together, the two of those guys that John pulls the pencil trick on, which was brutal.
It's good. Like that lived up to the legend.
And then one of them is this big dude who is in the credits as Raja, but he's played by retired sumo wrestler Yamamoto Yama Ryuta, who is, I guess, a well-known retired sumo wrestler who John keeps shooting him and he just keeps getting up and moving. It takes two headshots to take this guy down, which is just very funny.
He was a big deal, but he was pushed out of the sumo association after he and several other wrestlers were found to be involved in match fixing.
Oh.
So I guess he moved to films.
I guess.
You kind of have to after that. The fight between him and John is great, though.
Oh, yeah, because John's kicking him and punching him, and nothing is working, and nothing is working. But then we get a showdown with Common again, with Cassian. And it's again, Cassian seems to be on his level, but once again, he's been shot through the stomach again, but on the other side of where he had been stabbed. How many weeks in between? Doesn't seem like it's that many.
It doesn't seem like it's that many. And I mean, this is what I love about these movies. From the get-go, John's face has cuts and blood on it from minute one to the end of this film. Like, John is never healthy in this movie.
No, he's... He is a man of sheer will, as they say.
I do like this fight with Common on the subway, though.
The fight with Common on the subway is great because it ends in a way that teases something. Have we met the Bowery King yet?
Not yet.
Okay, it's after this. So, yeah. So, basically, John and Cassian fight, and which ends up with John shoving a knife into Cassian's chest. But he says, hey, you can pull out that knife and stab me with it, but that's your aorta. You'll bleed to death. Or you leave it there and maybe live. Yeah. Professional courtesy.
The shot stays on Common, who is just seething. He knows he has to stay still. But you can, and Common does a great job, like, just visually with this. And I love this sequence. And then, yes, then we get the Bowery King, who delights me so much.
Honestly, I can't believe that that Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves have never worked together before. It seems like they're a pretty good match. It seems like they have great chemistry.
They do. And I love, is this the first time they've re-teamed since The Matrix?
I could not tell you that, but I bet it is. Because what else would they have been in together?
I believe this is their first re-team since then. So, I mean, obviously they have a great chemistry, a good working relationship. And again, this is Keanu bringing all of his friends from his action movies of yore, like, back in the fold. I'm half surprised Sandra Bullock didn't show up. You know, just to bring all of his action franchises together. I guess that wasn't a franchise with him. He just was in the first one.
Yeah.
But I,
he does go more than 50 miles an hour for the beginning bit in the
yeah, that's true. But yes, set up the Bowery King, because this sequence is one of my favorites in the entire movie.
So yeah, John is fighting in the subway, and he finally puts the knife in common. As he gets off the subway, of course, he sees two more guys that he knows. He clocks that these guys are after me, and as he's sort of looking around and running away, you see it sort of pan over this homeless guy on the street who's like, they see you. You can't see them, but they see, like, just basically, you know, stereotypical homeless person crazy talk. Where John goes up to him, pulls out one of those fancy gold coins, drops it in his cup, and says, take me to him. And the guy looks up. Oh, and he says, take me to him. And then he just collapses on the ground and covers himself in a newspaper. After which point, the homeless guy pulls out a gun that we didn't know he had and pulls a tarp over John and then proceeds to kill these two dudes that have come up, which is like, okay, what's going on here? And we are introduced to the Bowery King, who looks like a homeless guy himself, but as John and he continue talking, like, and they're putting microchips into carrier pigeon things. I presume, yeah, maybe they were supposed to be SIM cards to be shipped around, but I don't actually know.
Well, so he runs his own network because he's kind of the, he's not working in contention with the High Table, but he kind of is. But he's working his own thing. But yes, if he can upset the current balance, then he wants to do it. And he knows that, hey, all right, let's see what John Wick has to say.
Yeah,
because we've met before.
Yeah, as we learn, Mr. Wick and I have met before, though he doesn't remember. And we learn he shows a scar in his neck that, perfectly placed. And if I take pressure off of it and shoot him in the back, I'd have killed him, but I would have bled out and died. So it's like, it's another one of those things where John gave somebody a choice, and now maybe there will be some payback or something like that. But it's just after that, they move into the Bowery King's, like, locker room where people are both dressing up as and changing out of homeless people costumes, which I just thought was very, very, very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of very fun, because I feel like we're coming to the end of our conversation about this movie now. Boy, do I love a Hall of Mirrors fight scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a, Enter the Dragon. I mean, Enter the Dragon is, I think, probably the most famous one. I'm sure it's been.
Yes, it is.
I'm sure it's been in others, and of course, the Enter the Dragon fight has been referenced 100 times. But
also, this group of people are 100% going to pay homage to Enter the Dragon.
Definitely, you know? definitely. This fight scene is fun for a number of reasons. One is that John is given a gun by the Bowery King, by not Morpheus. That only has 7 bullets. and he runs out of bullets almost immediately. And for the rest of the fight, he has to take dudes down and then take their guns and kill the next set of guys. So he's constantly swapping guns as he kills guys, which is just, it's a ton of fun. It's just so much fun.
It's also very video game because, like, I recently played the new 007 game, which is excellent. And if you run out of bullets and you're using one of the you know, bad guys' guns, you also can press R2 and just chuck at their face, which John does immediately.
Yeah, a couple of times.
I do want to point out the reason he gets 7 bullets is because there is a $7 million bounty on his head. So as their deal, his thing is, oh, yeah. I'll give you 7 bullets, $1 million a bullet, to basically like make up for your contract. And because John is wanting and aiming to kill Santino.
Oh yes, because Santino put the hit out on him and he wants to take this dude out.
But because Santino now holds a seat at the high table, if John kills him, he brings the wrath of the high table upon him in full. And the Bowery King knows that. And because they want to kill him. But John says, well, if you kill him, the high table comes after you. If I kill them, they come after me.
Well, but also, if I don't kill him, you think they're going to stop where they are now? No, they're going to push on through and they're going to try to push you out of your own territory.
Yeah, which, I mean, Santino even says that to Winston when Winston pulls rank and pulls rules. And, I mean, Santino's, well, we'll see about that. We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah. So, but we have this long, drawn-out fight scene where a bunch of people get killed in really interesting ways. John Wick is a very deadly person that he always hits either a leg or the chest before he gets the headshot because... It's like in Zombieland, you double tap, but he always puts the bullet through the head to make sure they stay down, you know, and it gets down to the final fight with Ruby Rose and her Ares character, which that was fine. I didn't care that much. I don't know.
They needed to give her more screen time as opposed to have her slinking around so she knows where John's hiding and what his methods of escape are so they can, you know, kill him when he's done with the job. And that's all well and good, but I really think they wasted a good character and a fun performance. And, you know, it is what it is. And here's where we get to the things that, like, I think are both satisfying and possibly... just not quite executed the way it should have been. First, we get, you know, we haven't even talked about the interactions that he gets with Lance Reddick in this movie, which are very, very fun.
Yeah, it's great.
We gotta talk about our commander. We have to. On the day of the last Destiny 2 drop, we have to talk about
on today our commander. Of all days.
And I mean. Literally every time I see this man, especially in these movies that he very much loved, and I don't know if you've watched any of the interviews. Nice. For those who can't see, because you can't, Drew has brought out his vinyl ghost. I would bring out mine, but Cal Kestis is resting upon it. but there's a great story. I think it's from John Wick Chapter 3. It has to be. Where... he was telling us, Lance was telling a story of, because someone asked about, you know, what it was like working with Keanu again. And he goes, well, let me tell you this story to let you know the kind of guy that Keanu Reeves is. It's his birthday. And he doesn't have to work that day. We're doing some shoots. And I see his girlfriend and I was kind of confused because she's walking towards me. And we weren't going to make a big deal because he, you know, likes to keep things private. And, you know, had the day off, so we weren't going to do anything at the studio. And he's like, you know, what's going on? He's like, I asked Keanu what he wanted to do for his birthday, and he said he wanted to come see Lance.
Oh.
He's like, I want to see Lance work. And that story also came out. I think I first heard that after Lance passed, so yeah. I just like broke down in tears. The first time I heard that, especially hearing the man himself tell the story. And I mean, it's also like, and he also like said, like, you know, oh, like he gave me a gift. Like he gave him like a watch or something. And he's like, that's just the kind of person that Keanu is. Like, so, if he loves working with you, you are part of his family.
Well, let me tell you something, and I haven't looked up what one of these looked like. I made a joke about it earlier, so I need to, maybe by next week I will go and make sure this isn't an apocryphal thing. But I mentioned that there was one of the guys from the first movie who was a named character in the first movie appears in the second movie as just a background, because he's a stunt guy, so he's one of the thugs. That gets killed by John Wick multiple times. and apparently, at least by the third movie, maybe the fourth movie, Keanu had t-shirts made for every member of the stunt cast that featured their kill count on screen, the amount of times that they had been killed in the movie.
That's so cool.
And it was unique to each of them. And you know what? I don't even know if that's true, but I love it. And it sounds like something that Keanu would do. So,
yeah, no, the stories and that they told about working with him were just wonderful. But like hearing that story about like that, all he wanted to do on his birthday is go see Lance work. And that just like brings so much joy to me. And of course, while he doesn't have a massive amount of screen time, like he's the one that takes care of John's dog.
He was a good dog.
While John's away, he was a good dog. I cannot do a Lance Reddick impression.
I can't. I don't even try.
the South African like the voice was a Lance Reddick original. Like they originally had him just be a New Yorker, and he goes, that doesn't quite make sense to me. And he's like, if this is this shadowy like world, my character would probably be somewhere else, but would also be extremely sophisticated. So he chose the African accent. That was a Lance Reddick choice, as far as I'm aware. So we get back to the Continental, where our friend is waiting, and
Santino.
Yes. I love that Drew knows that I can't remember his name.
I saw you thinking about saying Italian Udo Kier one more time, and I was like, I gotta stop him.
This is what it's like when I've been podcasting with someone for almost 15 years. It's like he knows me. I can't say he doesn't. But I love this bit because, you know, he's kind of showing off to the degree that even Winston's like sick of this guy, but Winston's going to still hold court. John comes in, and
have you ever looked at the menu of this place, John? A man could order something different for however many times or stay here for so many times
and some of that, yeah.
Yeah, and never have the same thing twice.
It's a great line. It's a great performance. For whatever reason, I thought there was some sort of deliberation. I in my memory, like John kind of leaves for a bit.
There was no deliberation. It was awesome.
And no. And even Winston's like, John, let's think about this, because. And this is what I love about the choices in these movies, and especially again, this is why I love the second half of this movie. It feels like the filmmakers are back. They're zeroed in. They know what they're doing. They know the world that they're working in, and they're happy about it. Winston, who we have really kind of come to interpret, has some sort of paternal affection for John, is trying to get him to not do the one thing that would erase any protection from the Continental, which we know from the last film is if you do business on Continental ground, it's basically holy ground, you are excommunicado and you lose every privilege of the Continental and everyone is after you. You have an open contract forever. And John does not care at all. Doesn't even deliberate. Guy's chewing on his steak.
He shoots him mid-sentence. Santino is...
Which is a baller choice.
I love it, because you hate this guy, and you know that he was planning to stay there for as long as possible, because John couldn't do anything about it, because there's no way that John would break the rules, da-da-da-da-da. And he does. And it's the one thing you don't expect John to do. And that is where we have maybe the coolest scene in the entire movie. In a movie that has a bunch of cool scenes in it. John is back at the ruins of his home, looking over, you know, the ashen pictures of the burnt up pictures of his dead wife that he can't see anymore. Oh, he cracked his phone completely earlier, so he can't see the video of his wife anymore either. He's at his lowest point. And then Lance Reddick, Sharon, comes in. Sharon?
It's Sharon, I believe.
I think it's pronounced differently in different things, because I feel like I've heard it also pronounced Chiron at some point, but that might just be completely wrong. Anyway, Lance Reddick shows up and escorts John to... I don't know where is it in Central Park? I don't know exactly know where it is, other than this big fountain in New York City.
It's supposed to be in New York. I just don't know where.
And John is fully expecting to die right here. It's over. And he just sees Winston sitting at the edge of the fountain, and they just have a little conversation. It's like, and it's in this moment that there's a bunch of people around. It's just all these people milling about and just look like regular crowd shots. And then Winston says something, and they all stop and turn around and look at John. And it's like, oh, no, this guy is this powerful that he's got this many people wherever he is just making stuff happen. And then he waves them off and they return to their thing. And basically he gives him, was it an hour? So just 1 hour that he has to.
Yes, he said he's got 1 hour. But I'm worried. I feel like Ron Swanson here, where it's like, I'm worried you heard give me a lot of bacon and eggs. I said, give me all the bacon and eggs you have. There's not just a lot of people. It's every extra in what you would think is a New York moment.
Stops.
Hundreds of people stop.
It's so cool. It is
such a incredibly blocked moment. And like one of the best sequences in the entire film. Because John realizes, like, because I think he says, why am I still here? And I think Winston just says, because I deemed it so.
Yes, that's what he says. That's
and I'm like, oh,
that's
like,
cool.
Yes, like again, this movie does struggle to figure out where it is, and by the end of this movie, it does figure it out. And so, while it is extremely flawed, this movie is still awesome. It's still super fun. It's just, it's not the 5-star movie to me that the first one is, but this is still a really solid John Wick movie,
and it sets up what could potentially be, as you have somebody like Winston, who seems to care very deeply for John, have to enact this judgment on John. Like it's more interesting than random Italian crime boss who wants John to kill other random Italian crime boss. It's more interesting than second Russian crime boss that I hope Peter Stormare shows up again. You don't cast him in a bit role and maybe have, you know, not have him come back. But and as John walks through and he's looking at everybody, that like the lady with the stroller and I guess the homeless guy that he met earlier is there, like, as part of that too.
Yeah, just, he is.
And everybody's looking at their phones and everybody's, you know, oh, is John's really not safe. And now he has no one to turn to get a whole bunch of weapons or a new suit or anything like that. And then he starts
running.
Yeah.
And that's how the movie ends, which is such a cool way to end the film.
Man, it's a shame they didn't make another one of these things, huh?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, Oh boy, I'm glad this movie made almost $200 million.
So, you want some stats, Miles?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so in the first film, John Wick was hit by one car. How many cars was John Wick hit in the second film?
Three?
They double it. He's hit by two cars.
Oh, it's just two? Okay.
In the first movie, John Wick kills 77 people. In the second movie, he kills 128. So we are, I believe that puts us above, it definitely puts us above 200. I don't think it puts us at, I didn't do this math. Yeah, so 77 plus 128. We are at a collective 205 kills so far. And that's just the guys that John's killed. There's plenty of other people that die in these movies. So final thoughts, John Wick Chapter 2.
So despite the fact that it is a little bit at war with itself, like I said earlier, this movie maintains to be an absolute blast. John himself is still a very fascinating character, and this movie kind of deepens that for me, honestly. I think that Keanu is continuing just to show up and show out. And despite the fact that this might have some flaws, the action scenes are still really well choreographed. They get some excellent stunt performers and action.
There's only one that I was like, okay, that is definitely Keanu Reeves sitting in a still not moving car jumping out of it.
For sure.
It was in the very opening.
I think the actor that plays Sub-Zero in the recent Mortal Kombat movies is one of the guys that fights John in a sequence. And I think he was in the first one too. There's some great martial arts stuff, and that gets amped up. Like, I feel like this movie does have an identity crisis. I feel like they didn't know quite where they wanted to go. And I'm really excited to see if I feel the same way about John Wick chapters 3 and 4, because I feel like they absolutely knew what they wanted to do going forward by the end of this film. And it is really interesting to watch this movie, because you are watching this process, like a movie that is kind of at war with its own identity, but still comes out as a really solid John Wick film.
It adds more to the universe. It still luckily doesn't overexplain anything, but gives us just a few fun little looks, like the ladies that run the assassination, yes. Broadcast, the hit list stuff.
I do want to say something, because I thought about this after last week when I was one of that whole tirade about not wanting to know like how John Wick got out. I would reserve that for a video game. And because there's a John Wick game coming out, that might be the whole point of it. And I'm like, you know what? If you're going to make a John Wick game, put it when he's in business and trying to get out of it, because you can still do everything you want to with it. You can still go to any continental, you can still go to open world, you can have contracts, you have great fight sequences, and you can still not really screw with the world that was established by the movies. I also want a prequel, an actual film, but not how John gets out. I want as he's deciding to get out for Helen, I want some, like, I don't want it to be a full-on action film. Maybe the first sequence gives you a John Wick-style action sequence, but the rest of it is some way of the house husband, like, dramedy, like, awesomeness. And I, like, because maybe Helen doesn't know at first that he is John Wick.
John, you don't know how to do dishes?
I want, like, because Keanu doing way of the house husband would be so funny to me.
Keanu comes home from just walking around, and he takes off, you know, he undresses and he starts loading all of his clothes into a plastic bag, as he does every time after he goes on a big hit squad thing. And I was like, what are you doing with that? Just put them in the washer.
Exactly. Like, stuff like that, I think would make a fun little, like, I feel like action fans would be very pissed off about it, but I would love that as a weirdo movie in this universe.
Those
are my terms for John Wick prequels.
Keanu would do it as a series of shorts for a charity event. Let's talk to him.
Yeah,
let's get him on the horn. Let's get him on the horn. So with that said, gang, of course, what are we covering next week? That's John Wick 3 Parabellum. John Wick Chapter 3, because it's an action movie. It's a cool action movie franchise. They're not just movies, they're chapters of a story. This movie came out in 2019. We are getting closer and closer to the present, and effectively is a direct follow-up to the movie we just watched. So I've never seen it. Miles has seen it. So with that said, that is what we're going to talk about next week. In the meantime, if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of our show going back since John Wick was working. You can find us on social media, either @ themoreyounerd, just about everywhere. And of course, you can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. You can also find us on Cosmic Crit. What's Cosmic Crit, you ask? Well, that is our sister show where me and Miles and all of our friends play tabletop role-playing games, specifically the cool game Starfinder by Paizo, which is like D&D in space. It's very cool. And you can find that at CosmicCrit.com. Go to CosmicCrit.com and look in the upper right-hand corner to join the Cosmic Crit Discord to find your own fun games to play, or just talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, we're in the show as we always do with a rousing
nerd
out.
Who nerd for y'all?